Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer 3!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big town. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's AJ behind the glass, and it is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. No Brian today. I'm not sure he's ever returning to work, Brian McDonald. Dude doesn't work.
I mean, he is. He's got a hell of a good schedule in terms of time off.
Yeah, if he still has a job.
Well, he's with Glenn tonight.
AJ.
no one asked you to chime in.
You don't think we know that?
Do you think that you're just starting to get like Ryan now? You got a little comfortable, no. And now you're just kind of just like diarrhea of the mouth.
I've been here way longer than Ryan, so I mean...
Okay, so it was only a matter of time, is what you're saying.
No. We know that Brian's on remote engineering with Glenn Davis today. Soccer Matters 6 to 8 at Senate Avenue Brewing. U.S. national team talk. Dynamo Jack McGlynn on site. Premier League preview. We know that's happening, AJ.
Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis?
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're doing. Yeah. That's a playback to that's a recall to the other day. Anyways, Astros win a baseball game yesterday. Plenty to get to. Texans were back at practice. They placed Brevin Jordan on season-long IR. They signed a guy who's apparently playing ahead of Blake Fisher. Is it okay to cry as a quarterback when your players get hurt? That is the conversation going on around Houston right now. But we start with yesterday. Game one, a lot happening yesterday. There's like 4 lead stories yesterday. Carlos Correa returning to Houston, lead story. Alex Bregman homering in the first inning, but Alex Bregman's return to Houston, lead story. Christian Javier, his return after Tommy John surgery, 14 and a half months, lead story. And then the news after the game with Josh Hader, lead story. So we'll discuss it all. Usually we start with the pitching when the pitching was worthy, and I think the pitching was worthy last night, Blankers.
Yeah, you know what? I saw a lot of people losing their mind when... 2 hits on the first 2 batters and like 8 or 9 pitches in, they were down 2-0 and people were already pulling the plug on Christian Javier and worried as all get out and panic mode was setting in. And then suddenly Christian Javier settled in and he gave up like 1 hit after that, gave you 5 innings, actually had more control of the strike zone than I thought he was going to have and what we had seen previously, because he's never been like a consistent like strike thrower. But I was pretty pleased with what I saw out of Christian Javier.
So give us your true, honest feelings when Bregman homered in the first inning.
I wasn't. Well, the biggest thing to me was, and you know how I think, the first thing I'm thinking about is, are they going to be able to score 2 runs off of Garrett Crochet? Because Garrett Crochet has been pitching his tail off all season long, and he has been a main reason why the Red Sox, from a pitching perspective, have been really good, but he has been fantastic. And so I'm like, well, that's not ideal. You're down 2-0 to a guy that's a Cy Young leading candidate, you know, and a guy that could probably mow you down. And so I was a little bit pessimistic from that perspective, but then the way that they continue, look, all season long, they've been just so resilient at chipping away no matter, and they've been good against good pitchers too, but they found a way to kind of start. Correa started it. They chipped their way back into the ballgame. Before you knew it, they were taking control of the ballgame.
So what was your thoughts on Javier after you gave it the home run to Bregman?
I was concerned because of what we saw with Arrigetti. I was admittedly concerned simply because of the fact that all these starts are so important with these guys coming back, because they factor into what this team's going to be capable of doing going forward. So I was concerned. I wanted to see how he bounced back. If we're going to have another Arrigetti start where the first inning in Miami was, 6 hits in the first 7 guys faced or whatever. He settled in after that. He got out of it. I didn't like the pitch count either. There were a lot of things that were crossing my mind as concerning, And then what I didn't expect to have happen was what happened. He settled in and he pitched well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little nervous after he gave the home run to Bregman. You allow Roman Anthony to reach and then Bregman homers after he hangs a sweeper over the middle of the plate. I'm like, uh-oh. Oh, no. Not sure Christian Javier is going to have a good night. Not sure I feel very comfortable about Christian Javier in 2025. And then Christian Javier made everybody shut up, which was beautiful to see. Five innings, like just the traditional numbers. Five innings, two runs, three hits, two walks, which is very Javier-like start. Five strikeouts, like that's old school Javier. Maybe he gives you the extra inning if he was ramped up because he left the game after 85 pitches. And then when you dive in a little further, I mean, I could not have been happier with what I saw from Christian Javier. Everything except for that hanging sweeper to Alex Bregman, which by the way was only a home run at eight ballparks and it has like an expected batting average of 110. Right? So like that's an out at a lot of places. But I was incredibly pleased with what Christian Javier delivered yesterday. It goes beyond the box score. Like, what does he mean for the Astros in 2025? Like, somebody needs to step up to be the number three, number four, to fulfill this rotation. And you take the deep dive on some of Javier's stuff yesterday. Javier got it up to 95.5 miles per hour. He generated 10 swings and misses yesterday. All of that stuff is very, very positive. You go a step a little further. You look at the fastball velo, 93.5. I think that you have to, like, I don't look at last year with Christian Javier and take a look at his baseball savant and his velo. I even throw out 2023, because 2023 he wasn't very good. He had a drop in velo. He was throwing his changeup more. I think he was pitching through injury, quite frankly. So if you go back to his 2022 numbers, which was his last good season, a lot of the stuff we saw yesterday in terms of velo, in terms of spin, in terms of the induced vertical break, it is very, very similar to what we saw in 2022. So the stuff is back from Christian Javier. He had better stuff last night than he did last year, than he did in 2023. It looked like the stuff of vintage Javier. Obviously, add the feel of pitching in big league games over and over, and I really like where it's going. And oh, yeah. He added a sinker to his arsenal.
Sure did.
I remember Ocho complaining about Javier forever because Ocho hates starting pitchers that have a two-pitch mix. He never has thrown a third pitch more than 10% of the time. And then yesterday he bust out a sinker, throws it 14% of the time, which it wasn't even a good sinker, but it's a great balance to his invisible that looks like it's riding up. He threw his changeup 18% of the time yesterday. So when we last saw Christian Javier, his velo was down, he was trending in the wrong direction, he had a two-pitch mix. And he came back yesterday and was vintage Javier and then added two pitches that he's willing to throw more than 10% of the time. I could not have been more impressed than what we saw last night from Christian Javier.
Yeah, I think, again, because of what we saw out of Arrigetti, I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't have high expectations. Coming out of that, I have the firm belief that he's only going to get better. The fact that he added another pitch, as you mentioned, the fact that he seemed to be in control of all of his pitches. And again, he's going to walk a couple guys here or there. The biggest concern I had, I guess the biggest knock I would say, is he got into a lot of deep counts, which is kind of what he does anyway.
It is very much what he does.
But at the same time, you worry about the pitch count with a guy that isn't completely stretched out or isn't from the one, you know, from back from where he used to be, giving you six innings plus. But that's kind of what you expected from him. He didn't go deep into games. But the fact that the Reptilia, the whole fact that he does not get emotional out there, the fact that he is even keeled, any situation is not too big for him, and he is going to compete for you, and the fact that his pitches do enough that keep hitters one off balance, and having not seen a new pitch in his repertoire, you know that had the Red Sox at least talking, because that was going to give them something more to think about. But the fact that he doesn't have to be pounding the strike zone to get swings and misses, to get guys off balance, and to get the outs that he needed, that there's a lot to be encouraged about, that he can only get better from this, and he's facing a good baseball team.
Yeah, that was I was very, very pleased. And I get called cynical a lot. People call me Mr. Negative Nancy. No one ever has called me that. Javier was exactly what the doctor ordered for a team that didn't trade for a third starting pitcher, who have had a ton of injuries in the back of their rotation, in the middle of their rotation, needing somebody to step up. And look, Javier's got a long way to go. No one, like, his season isn't going to be defined in this one single start. Let's see how he bounces back. Let's see if the stuff stays the same. But incredibly encouraged. I'm glad you brought up the demeanor, because I mean, huge Astros Twitter, and rightfully so. Like, I'm not banging on Astros Twitter. Like, we lived through Arrigetti. We've lived through all of these injuries. Mm-hmm. Javier gives up a home run to, like, the fallen old hero and Alex Bregman. It's like, okay. Like, this has all the writing on the wall of another disappointing start from a rehabbing pitcher that is making his season debut. Arrigetti wasn't a season debut, but you understand what I'm saying. The point stands. And then all of a sudden, just super calm, like he's not fazed. Like, you could look at him after giving up a two-run homer or striking out a guy. He is the same. He is mismo. He does not change his emotion whatsoever. I kind of forgot that about him, and it's one of my favorite attributes that he possesses.
It's beautiful because you know that we see other emotions. Fromber's an extremely emotional pitcher. We know that from time to time, Hunter Brown can get caught in a call in a moment and can get ticked off to the point where it might alter his pitching. You don't see that ever from Javier. He's just the same guy going about his business, taking care of business. What I liked the most was after he was done, that he was really chatty in the dugout. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but talking to some of the guys and maybe, you know, and talking with Caratini and kind of going over some things, which is something you don't normally see from him a lot because that demeanor seems to carry over unless he's sitting there at the end of the bench, you know, with seeds with Fromber and the guys.
Yeah.
I like everything that I saw from him, and I have total confidence. This is a guy that we're going to, as he continues to pitch, if he pitches like this, that you can lean on a little bit to be one of those starters that you're going to have down the stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe like Arrigetti can jump him in the rotation, but that's a great problem to have. That was that's exactly what everybody needed to see from Christian Javier. Was really, really encouraging because the fastball and the sweeper looked good. And then, oh, okay, he's throwing a sinker now, which wasn't even a great sinker. Like, there's measurements on Pro Stuff Plus, which combines velo, spin, movement, all of those things. It has a 51, averages 100. But it's the counterpunch to the invisible. Yep. Like, Hunter Brown gives all the credit to turning around his career with the two-seamer that gets in on the righty. That's not even a good pitch. Like, go look at the numbers on it. It's not very good. But it's what it prevents the hitters to do to his other pitches, which makes it such a valuable weapon for him. I think the sinker could really play for him. But a couple of numbers yesterday. Christian Javier had it up to 93.5 yesterday. That's the velo. The average velo yesterday was 93.5. Whenever he was going in 2022, and again, I told you I'm dismissing 23. I think he was pitching through something. His velo was way down. Last year, his velo was down even more, and then they shut him down. Said, okay, let's have some Tommy John. 2022, his average fastball was 93.8. Last night, it was 93.5, and he got it up to 95 miles per hour. So it's there. The induced vertical break, he had it up to 19 inches yesterday. The average in 2022, when he was going good, was 20 inches, right around there. The sweeper, he threw that 26% of the time. Used to be called a slider back in 2022. But he threw his sweeper yesterday 26% of the time. In 22, he threw it 27.5%. I forgot to mention the four-seam fastball, the invisible. He threw it 34% of the time yesterday. In 22, he threw it 60% of the time. He was a two-pitch mix guy. He threw his changeup last night 18%. In 22, 4%. He threw his sinker yesterday 14%. In 2022, he threw two on the year. There were probably miscalculations. Threw his curveball yesterday 8%. In 22, he threw it 8.5%. So last night, he threw four pitches 14% of the time or more. He threw all five pitches 8% of the time or more. In 2022, he had three pitches that he threw 8% of the time and just two pitches more than 10% of the time. Christian Javier is a new dude. He's all the vintage stuff, but he's added to his arsenal, and I love it.
Well, and the other thing is you credit the Astros. We continually talk about the Miller and Murphy factor in this and all the other guys that factor in, and evidently this other change of pace pitch now that he's bringing into the mix was developed when he was down at the minor league camp, but with some guys that he's been working with. And you credit the fact that the Astros pay close attention to sequencing, to everything that goes into pitching a baseball, not just the velocity. Because I think a lot of people thought that Christian Javier threw harder when he threw before the surgery and didn't realize he's right on the button with exactly where he should be. The fact is it's deception. Everything that he does is deceptive because of the invisible, because of the way his pitches move. And if he adds some more pitches to his repertoire, now he's really even going to a deeper dive into becoming a total pitcher, not just a pitcher that has a pitch or two that really you know, befuddles hitters.
I'm bullish. I am bullish on Christian Javier. I'm very excited for Christian Javier. We'll get into quarterbacks crying on the field. Some people feel a certain type of way of this. What is picture interest at Texans camp? Bottom 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, too. Everybody loves a top 10. Well, you got to play both sides. We're true journalists here. You got to have a bottom 10. Of course you do. There's breaking news from the Houston Astros. The Astros tweeting minutes ago. They have placed Josh Hader on the 15-day IL with a left shoulder strain. They have reinstated Sean Dubin from the 15-day IL, which, why didn't you do that yesterday? They have recalled Colton Gordon from AAA, and they have DFA'd Hector Neris.
I thought it was coming after last night. I did too.
I thought, you know what I thought his saving grace was going to be?
The 10-year.
The Hader injury.
Oh.
I thought the Hader injury was going to save some time for Hector Neris. So, tip of the cap, Astros give Hector Neris a little bit of a make-a-wish. Give him the 10th a year, but they don't give him the first day in the 11th year.
Well, now they gave him a saddle and he can ride out of town with it.
Yeah. Did they really give him a saddle?
You didn't see it?
No.
Oh, on the broadcast last night. They showed him at his locker when they did, you know, they decorated his locker and everything for the celebration for the 10-year anniversary. And he's sitting there, and in front of him is just this I'm like, what is that? Is that like the people – it looked like a bunch of cowboy belts.
That's funny.
And all these other things and a bunch of leather. And I'm going, what the hell is that? And then Blummer finally said, oh, believe it or not, that's actually a saddle. And it's usable. And I'm like, oh, well, now you can ride it out of town.
That's interesting. All right, so Josh Hader on the IL. Lots to talk about from yesterday's game. Haven't touched on Correa. Haven't touched on Bregman. A lot of the offense yesterday as well. But no Josh Hader last night. Everybody, oh, Espada, what is he doing managing this game using De Los Santos instead of Hader? The moment I saw Hader not warming up in the bullpen, I was like, uh-oh, this might not be good. Hopefully he's just shut down because he got warm yesterday and threw 40 pitches Friday. But the moment that Hader was not warming up in the bottom of the eighth, alarm bells were ringing in my head. Espada mentioned after the game yesterday that he was feeling a little bit something in his shoulder. I thought they should have just placed him on the IL yesterday. But the news today, he is on the injured list as of right now. Any blame to Joe Espada with the usage of Hader? How crippling a blow is this? And can the Astros survive without Josh Hader for 2 weeks, for 2 months, for the rest of the year? 713-780-3776. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on TikTok at ESPN 975. Twitter at ESPN 975 as well. Blankers at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Brandon. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Josh Hader has been placed on the injured list with left shoulder soreness. Not great. Not great news for the Houston Astros, who have been crushed by injuries this year. Now it's their closer. Left shoulder strain. Let me be precise. Left shoulder strain for Josh Hader. What are your thoughts to this? What is the panic that you're having with the Astros closer?
I'm with you on my thoughts last night. My buddy and I were texting during the game.
It's nice to have those.
Yeah. And the minute that I saw what they were doing in the bullpen, I'm like, wait a minute. Where's Josh Hader? I'm like, he threw 30-some pitches on Friday, but he should be okay today. And then he right away responds, oh, God, I hope he's not hurt, too. And I'm like, don't say that. But now that you said that, yeah, that just doesn't seem right. That after the game, you hear what you hear. And now everybody, of course, on Twitter takes it to the very furthest extreme that he needs Tommy John. And this is crushing and you know, everything that's going on with Josh Hader. I think this is best case scenario. I think that you look at the fact that it's not immediately. But we don't know what the Astros anyway, if they were going to tell us the truth.
How is this best case scenario?
Best case scenario is that it's not something major yet. It's not something so serious. Like, it's not, you know, when we've heard like forearms and other things and that suddenly that it could be something a lot worse.
I think best case scenario is he's perfectly fine, not on the injured list, and he would close last night's game.
Okay, great. Then you want to nitpick it, then nitpick it. I'm just saying it's better than having like a major issue with an elbow or a shoulder or something where, you know, he shut down for a lot longer, at least for right now. they can get by with this. They can get by and they can live for the retroactive of till the 26th of this month. They can make do. It's just that he's had a lot of usage this year. He's done a lot more of the two-inning thing. And coming off the fact that he had 30-some pitches and threw the most pitches he's thrown all year, that I can understand where it's been more, you know, it's been more taxing on his arm. Hopefully it's just the extra wear and tear, and that with 15 days he'll be fine.
Yeah, I guess I can't allow myself to get to the point where I expect him back in 2 weeks.
Okay.
I'm curious how you've arrived there.
Because I think that in a lot, and again, every situation is different. And I understand with some of these guys that have soreness, inflammation, and whatever technically they're going to label it, that they're not immediately. Starters are different because they have to be stretched out. And when you miss some time, sometimes it takes longer to get back. I'm hopeful because Dubin took some time too. I'm hopeful with how important he is, that this is just like he's been putting a lot of extra, and he just came off an appearance where he put two innings of extra work on his shoulder, and that after 15 days and they get him some extra rehab and they get him some extra treatment, that hopefully that it's only going to be toward till the end of the time on the IL and he'll be back. If he's not, yeah, it's a major concern for this baseball team because of how important he and Abreu have been at the back end.
So is it hope, or is there something that's like telling you it's not serious?
There's nothing telling me anything. I just...
Then how's it best case? I'm so confused by that.
Jeremy, if you want to continue to do this, do it. Nitpick it. My best case, you're right, is that there's nothing wrong at all. But I think that because of what went down yesterday and what Espada said after the game about the fact that when he walked in, he said he started doing whatever he was doing to go through the pre-getting, doing some throwing or pitching stuff done, that it didn't feel right. If it doesn't feel right, then there's definitely something going on. So short of just being able to say, hey, thank God we had it all checked out, you're good, get back out there, this to me is at least giving me hope that in 15 days that he could be back helping this baseball team.
I'm sorry. I can't arrive to it being best case. And like, I can't dismiss he's going to be back in 2 to 3 weeks. I'm with you. I hope that he is. I just don't know what clues we have that suggest that. You mentioned the quote from Espada after the game yesterday, because everybody was wondering, and some people during the ninth inning were blaming Espada for not using Hader. Like, let's know some ball a little bit here, casuals. But after the game, Espada said about Hader, he walked in Hader today, and he was doing his plyo exercises before doing his throwing program, and he just did not feel right. So we went ahead and we got some testing done. We're waiting on those results, and we should have something more tomorrow. Espada has not talked today. Hopefully, Espada will have a quote or two about Josh Hader. I'm sure he'll be asked. So once we get that, we'll relay that on. I have a hard time with this, mostly because of this training staff, who didn't put Kyle Tucker on the injured list immediately. We had him running on a treadmill. Oh, yeah, he's got a broken leg, by the way. Yordan Alvarez playing through injury. And look, maybe Yordan didn't report an injury. Who knows there? But then was playing with a broken hand, or at least it eventually become broken. And he was taking BP with a broken hand. Jeremy Pena, they didn't diagnose the broken rib. Jake Myers with the calf strain. I just, it's hard for me to have your optimism. And I haven't seen the clues where it's more minor than serious.
And don't forget the imaging and the lack thereof in a lot of those cases, too. I mean, you make a very valid point on the fact that, look, I'm hopeful that a guy that has been pretty durable throughout his career and is giving you everything he can by giving you more, I'm hopeful that this is a situation where just because of the overuse recently as Friday, that there's a chance that this can just be a 15-day stint and he can come back. There's no doubt that, you know, we keep wondering, like, when is the one injury that's going to hit this team to where, you know, crap's going to hit the wall. Like, you've got to do something. We kept saying with the medical staff, you just don't know something has to be done. Maybe I think they've been trying to push it back till the off season. But at the same time, I can't argue with the fact that because of this medical staff and the misdiagnoses, the mistreatments, and the fact that no matter what they say, it's normally longer than that, that you're absolutely right. That, you know, maybe I shouldn't be that optimistic, that it should be a month or more with hopes that he can help you by the time you reach the playoffs. I just hope from the perspective of kind of focusing on Friday, that was another long outing, his most pitches of the entire season, that maybe that kind of pushed it, push something the wrong way to make him feel a certain way, and that hopefully they can get through this.
Does the strain make you more optimistic than like soreness or what's the other word they use? Discomfort?
Well, because discomfort, I've just completely, I throw that out because of the fact they use it so often with so many injuries that it means nothing to me.
Yeah.
To me, yes, I think that if it's a strain, that it showed that something was done to it that maybe says, okay, now we know exactly what it is and we know how to treat it, as opposed to my elbow doesn't feel right, my shoulder doesn't feel right, and then they're playing the guessing game with some people that I don't have a whole lot of faith in to try and quote-unquote figure it out.
Look, I hope that you're right. I was saying yesterday on the Twitter at Jeremy Branham, I was saying that the moment that Hader went to a spot and be like, hey, my shoulder's hurt, like put him on the IL that instance, that moment, especially whenever you have Javier coming back. Who knows what you're getting from him? Like, we would have been, and Dubin was with the team. Like, it would have been very easy to just do this Hader, IL, Dubin, you're on the 26 yesterday. And Dubin didn't pitch on Sunday either for Sugarland. So I was a little bit bothered by that. I mean, they won. Javier pitched well. Is it that big a deal? No, it's not that big a deal. Whatever, Branham, they won. I totally get it. I would have preferred they did this a day ago just because, like, I'm an error on the side of placing him on the IL. Hopefully a spot in the next few minutes is like, nothing structurally wrong. We just want to shut him down for 2 weeks, get him right. Because I'm okay with that. Like, I think they can survive without Josh Hader for like a month-ish. Like, that's the maximum amount. I think that they can keep their head above water for 3 to 4 weeks, get him back, and then once he's back, he's strong, and he's pitching the rest of the year. I do think that they could survive Josh Hader on the injured list for a bit, for a few weeks. They obviously need him back for, you know, the last half a month of the year, the last 20 games, and then obviously you need him back for the playoffs. But I am on the side of they can survive without Hader for a while.
No, I think so. I think I'm with you on that. Like, you had a bullpen that for the most of the year, and I think as of last night, the graphic they put up was like they have the fourth best bullpen in baseball. I mean, the fact is these guys have been performing at a very high level all season long. And you've got a guy, which a lot of teams don't have, that your setup guy is capable of being a closer, even if it is for however long they need him to do it. Now, how you get to that closer guy is going to take a different path. But you do have guys like Souza and Okert, and you know, you saw some things out of the Del Santos, the guy they just brought in, that with a 97+, and we just got done talking about Javier adding a pitch to his repertoire, that they obviously saw something they like with the arm that he has. Maybe they do something, change something, add something to where he can be effective. And again, it's not supposed to be for the next 6 months. It's for how do you kind of, one more time,
fingers crossed.
You hope, right? But bridge the gap.
That I heard labrum. I'm worried about the labrum here.
Like, I hear a lot of people immediately go to the Ryan Pressly card. Like, you know.
Let's kick that around the other side.
Okay.
Would you be interested in the Ryan Pressly? There's also some other layers to this onion, I think, that we need to peel. Other than, like, okay, do you add somebody? Ryan Presley's out there. Kendall Graveman's out there, too. I didn't really realize that. And then also people are saying that Joe Espada has overused Josh Hader. Is there any credence to that opinion? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hader's on the IL. Left shoulder strain. We'll keep an eye out. Joe Espada will be talking to the media soon. Our guy Will Kunkel, I believe, is over there. So we'll any news that comes out from Espada in relation to Hader, we will let you know. Also, Hector Neris has been DFA'd. He's gone. They gave him 10 years. They didn't give him the 10th year first day, which I'm good with that. I don't think he's a big league pitcher anymore.
No, I mean, what we saw again last night has been unfixable. I just think that they thought they could fix something, that they, you know, they found the best of Hector Neris. I think it's three stints now with the Astros. I think at one point he was a really, really valuable piece of that bullpen. I think those days are past. And the fact that he kept going to the well on a pitch that wasn't doing what it was supposed to do and he was getting hit hard because of it tells me all that I need to know. He just, there's no place for him here.
Can Colton Gordon be Josh Hader? 713-780. I'm kidding. Some people have kicked around the Ryan Pressly thing. We had a texture Ryan Pressly time. I saw it on the internet today. Where are you with the Ryan Pressly talk?
Look, it's similar to Naris in a lot of ways. We saw a lot leading up to him being traded to Chicago that said that a whole lot of people didn't want or need Ryan Pressly anymore in Houston. I think that he's a name that's out there, and because, again, there's all this reunion tour that's going on, and also because of the fact that they brought a guy like Naris back, that you hope you're bringing back Ryan Pressly, but you can't hope that you're getting the Ryan Pressly that was so good for you for so long. This is a guy that the Cubs traded for and then flat out got rid of for a reason. He just wasn't good for them. So if you suddenly think the resurrection tour begins and continues with Ryan Pressly coming back and then returning to form, I don't think we need to get Ryan Pressly.
I'm out. I'm with you. The traditional number is 4.35 ERA isn't the worst in the world. The whip, though, is over 1.5. That I can't deal with a 1.5 whip. That does not sound good. Who wants a 1.5 whip? 28 strikeouts and 41 1/3. Those aren't good numbers for a reliever. He has a negative 0.6 war. So the average replacement player has been better than Ryan Pressly this year. Let's dive into the peripherals, the analytics, the deep data. He is awful. His baseball savant is ice cold. It's like an Eskimo's igloo. The only thing that he has a decent number on are ground ball percentage. I really don't want relievers that get a bunch of ground balls. I like receivers that get a bunch of strikeouts. So I don't like the reunion idea of Ryan Pressly. I'm out. I thought Dana Brown did a great job to get out of some of that contract. Remember, he ate some of the money. Mm-hmm. I am not interested in going down the Ryan Pressly reunion tour at all.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just think that, you know, be tip the cap and be happy and grateful that you got the best of Ryan Pressly when you got him. But it's just really, really hard to expect or think that suddenly a return to Houston is going to revive. It's different from a Carlos Correa who's still got so much left in the tank that gets revitalized and feels like, you know, uplifted even more coming back to this situation. He doesn't pitch. And when your pitches go south or one of your best pitches, you don't get the same results out of anymore. It's a totally different ball game, literally. And I think it's very unfair to all parties involved to expect that Ryan Pressly is going to come back and he's somehow going to find it. And he's somehow going to be your savior because it's not happening.
No. Pressly getting signed for show. So somebody definitely out on Pressly. Didn't him and Dana end on bad terms anyway? So I wouldn't expect Dana to want to sign him. I don't think that it was bad terms. I think it's very difficult trading Pressly, but he had a waive as no trade. Dana said that they had, like, you know, good talks. I'm sure it's a very awkward situation, but I think that Pressly would be open to it, assuming he still wants to pitch. I saw some articles that he's contemplating retirement. So
what does that tell you too? That means he
probably thinks he's washed.
Yeah, exactly. From a being real with yourself perspective, he's probably facing the fact that he ain't the same pitcher he once was. And if his stuff ain't competing anymore, then he's probably done with the game.
Yeah.
And you know, you had mentioned Minnesota. I think the only places that he would even consider pitching at this point are Minnesota and Houston because he's been there before.
I mean, that's a guess.
And he's had success.
I mean, maybe he would just...
I don't think he wants to go to Minnesota now because it looks like a fire sale.
Yeah, but I mean, what if Seattle came calling? Here's $5 million for the rest of the year. That'd be hard to say no to. You're a competing team. They're offering you a good chunk of change. I have a tough time believing he would only, okay, if he wanted to, pitch for Houston and Minnesota.
I think his first choice, again, unless I don't know if there's some bad blood or something behind the scenes, but I would think being a guy from Texas that really loved his stay here, had a no trades because he didn't want to leave here. I think his number one choice would be, if he was going to pitch the rest of the year, would be to come back here.
Like, if every single team in baseball said, here's $2 million for the rest of the season, would Houston be at the top of that list? I would have no problem saying that.
Yeah, I think so.
I think there are other teams he would pitch for. Isn't he from the Dallas area, too? Like, you know, Rangers don't have a great bullpen. But, I mean, look, Pressly's been free for a couple of weeks now, and no one's really kicked the tires. And he's even contemplating retirement. I'm no way on Pressly. Texture, no way to Pressly. I would rather get rid of Hader for some money now along with Naris. Okay, that's weird.
Oh, that's dumb.
I mean, that's an off-season conversation with Hader. Not a right now conversation with Hader.
He's been nails this year.
He's been good. He's been really good. All-star, really, really good. All-stars don't matter anymore, but he still was very, very good. I was going to say something in relation to this. Oh, I'd rather see life on the line. You need three outs in a decent spot. Seventh inning, you're up a run. You're facing 3, 4, 5 in whoever's lineup. Let's say the handedness is equal. There's no positive one way or the other. Would you? And they're all righties anyways. De Los Santos or Presley? Life on the line. You need to get out of the inning unscathed.
It's very small sample size in what I saw at De Los Santos. But De Los Santos has something that Ryan Presley doesn't have that competes, and that's a 97-plus fastball that can get anybody out at any time, no matter what your secondary pitches are. And I know that Ryan Presley relies on a lot of spin that ain't spinning the right way anymore. I'd probably go De Los Santos.
To me, it's a slam dunk, De Los Santos. Give me De Los Santos. I like that guy. Life on the line, seventh inning, up a run. You need a scoreless inning facing 3, 4, 5 in a good lineup. Sean Dubin or Ryan Presley? That's a slam dunk for Dubin for me. Slam dunk.
Here's where I would disagree. I think in terms of been there, done that demeanor that means something in those clutch situations, I think Presley, we talked about it with Javier, I think he would be very even keeled in the situation. I think that he wouldn't get caught up in the moment. But from a stuff perspective, I got to believe that Dubin's stuff is probably better than what Presley still has left.
Way better. Presley does have the pelts. You're right. He does have the experience. No doubt about that. The back of the baseball card. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Robbie, you're in the hive. Robbie, what's up?
Hey, how are y'all doing today? I'm having a great day. Okay, I'm in complete agreement with Presley and no go. And the baseball savant were right about Hector Neris, 2 weeks ago when you said that you can't trust him?
Yeah.
So I'm going to hang up and listen to what y'all got to say.
Thanks, Robbie. Always good to hear from you, buddy. I mean, can't trust or not. We heard the minute that they got Neris back that they had, the pitching guys and the analytics guys had took a deep dive into what he had been throwing for the two other teams he had played for this year and basically said, sequencing, we saw some things, we think there's something. Well, what you thought you could fix didn't get fixed. And you're in a point in the season where unless you're in a complete blowout, you're not using Hector Neris anyway, and you need to find someone like someone that they've already found in De Los Santos that's throwing 97-plus that maybe if they find something on a secondary pitch with him, he could be far more effective.
No, I'm with that. I'm not losing sleep over acquiring Presley. People are remembering the old Ryan Presley. They're not looking at this current version of Ryan Presley because he's even worse than he was last year. And like we were ready to run him out of town. The moxie and savvy also comes with a confidence of knowing your stuff plays. Presley stuff no longer plays. Which if the contemplating retirement things are true, it probably speaks to that text specifically. De La Cruz and Abreu might be De Los Santos. In Abreu might be a decent 1-2 punch down the stretch. See, the eighth inning's going to be, I think they're going to go matchups. Like, Abreu's going to be obvious closer. I think he'll be fine in that role. I agree with what you said earlier. It's not so much the ninth inning you're worried about. It's more the sixth, seventh, and eighth.
Yep.
And I don't think that De Los Santos is immediately going to be the eighth inning guy. I think that Caleb Ort's been really good lately, by the way. Like, straight scoreless outings, maybe six straight, something like that. To me, it's going to be a spot of mixing and matching.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. The beneficial thing in all of this is you've had guys with the bullpen that I mentioned as one of the top five bullpens in baseball all season long. You've got guys you can choose from. You've got guys that have been stellar at different points in this season. Ort's been pitching really well lately. He was the first name I was going to mention. And again, another guy that's got a plus fastball that can absolutely dust guys just with the one fastball. You look at other guys, Souza, you look at Okert, you look at King. You've got three guys right there. And the benefit of having a lefty is now you've got righties to choose from, and you've also got lefties to choose from. When you say that De Los Santos and you've got Ort, and then you work in the three lefties that I just mentioned, and at least Espada's got options. You can ride the hot hand. You can ride guys based on what the numbers say. But there's plenty of guys to choose from to get you through 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, to me, he's going to be mixing and matching. He's going to be managing his tail off, much like he did whenever all of these position players were hurt, where he's mixing and matching different lineup every day, and he's still doing it with the back of the lineup. Chaz against lefties. You're going to see Cam Smith a lot against lefties. Today, with a righty on the mound, he's starting both Trammell and Melton. Smith has the day off. So, Joe Espada is managing his tail off right now, man. Like, they're not healthy. They're not 100%. He's going to have to do a bunch of searching, bunch of mixing and matching. But that's why he gets paid the big bucks, the most interesting manager in the world. Hopefully, it's just not long-term.
Well, but and the thing is, too, is that, again, the same way that people are hopeful that, you know, we're thinking that Brian Presley could come in and save the day, the minute that you get the news about Hader and everybody's pointing a finger and wanting to blame Joe Espada. Joe Espada is the front runner for manager of the year in the American League because of the fact that with all these injuries, and let's not forget that they lead the league and how many guys they have on the IL, that they're finding a way to put a Band-Aid on every wound that they take and still maintain a lead in first place and be the team that they've been all season long. Joe Espada should not be getting the blame and have a finger pointed at him for as much as the people are throwing at him right now.
Should Espada have any blame? I'll counter that on the other side, get your thoughts on it as well. Plus, plenty to kick around from yesterday's game. I mean, the offense was nuts. You had Christian Walker doing things. Chaz McCormick, people wanted him DFA'd. He was getting in on things. Ramon Urias with a long ball as well. He had a good game yesterday. Still plenty to kick around. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Boy, this heat is something, huh? Are you looking to escape the city for a little bit? Maybe get out to some beautiful nature, the great outdoors, some magnificent trees, which provide shade. It'll let you get out of the heat a little bit. Escape the rat race. Escape the hustle and bustle of the job, traffic, whatever's causing you that stress and anxiety, and get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Escape the city. Enjoy the relaxing, great outdoors. Book that stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com. Mention those open green spaces. Wildlife you don't see in the city. There's something great about that. There's something peaceful about that. Seeing the wildlife you don't see in the loop just running around. It makes you think about the better things in life. Beautiful, majestic trees, which this time of year they're great because it provides some shade, as I mentioned. And some of the best fishing in Texas. Fish on the Two Creeks. They have a catch and release pond in the middle of the property, which is great for the kiddos. You can't beat it. It's only 90 minutes from Houston, too. You can escape the city without traveling too far at Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You don't have to be in the car for hours upon hours and all day. You don't have to worry about TSA and going through the airport. You're there in 90 minutes. You'll be hiking their 92 acres worth of property in no time. Kayak in their water in no time. Pickleball courts, if that's your thing. Or just hang out by the pool. That's cool, too. Two Creeks Crossing Resort loves to take care of their visitors. We were out there a couple of months ago. Branham family had a great time. Food truck both nights that we were there. They had some live music on a Saturday night. That's cool too. But they're always looking for ways to take care of their visitors, always have you in the forefront of their mind. We stayed in the treehouse. Trees running through the house was fantastic. Kids love it. You can stay in the treehouse, but they also have glamping for you. That's always a great time. Great cabins right on the creek. That's cool too. Pull up the RV. They have a great spot for your RV as well. They have the perfect stay for everybody. So book that stay now at twocreekscrossingresort.com. Don't balk. Book it now at twocreekscrossingresort.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
I think as well that it is silly to put any blame on Espada for this. He's overusing. That's silly. Oh, multi-innings. The guys need to be capable to pitch multi-innings. So I'm not on the bash Espada thing at all. Most interesting manager in the world. I think that he should be on the short list of American League Manager of the Year. The pitching Hader and Abreu with four-run leads, though, does annoy me.
Oh, that.
It's annoyed me for multiple years now.
See, now, what you just said, too, is goes back to me thinking the same thing as you were thinking, but also as it relates to Yordan. At a certain point, you also have to go to the player, right? The same way Josh Hader said, I'm not pitching more than one inning in San Diego and was chasing the big deal that he got. Well, then you're just not going to do it. You know, the player has already expressed his feelings. You can go back and forth on whether he should or shouldn't have that opinion. But it's always going, Yordan, how do you feel? And based on how you feel, that's how you react. So the fact is that when he's been used as much as he's been used, he's been telling the coaching staff, I'm sure he's good to go. I can get you three outs today. I can do what you need me to do. I don't think that Josh Hader's going to go out there if he doesn't feel good and say, yeah, I can give you an extra inning. Now, it was not ideal Friday night that he had a very low pitch count after the first inning, went back out there, and then had some traffic and some deep counts, and suddenly he was in the 30s. But I don't think that you're going to put this on Espada, because Espada's not going to put this on Hader if Hader doesn't feel like he wants to do this.
No, there's zero to do with Hader. Espada. Remember when Hader wouldn't pitch two innings, took days off with San Diego because he was scared of injury. Now he pitched two innings last season, a little this season, and now injured. Makes me wonder if they were signed for a while. I don't think they were correlated at all. Hader was ticked off that he got screwed over in arbitration because he was like the multi-inning guy, wasn't getting saves. And then the team was bickering about a couple of million dollars, and they went to the arbiter, and the arbiter said, well, you're not getting saves. And Josh Hader said, that ticks me off. I'm going to go kill some turkeys, and I'm only going to pitch one inning now. And then Hader, famously, as soon as he signed the big money deal with the Astros, said, I'm willing to do whatever I need to do for the team. So to me, it wasn't about like a ticking time bomb. Mm-mm. And hopefully it's just soreness and he's good to go in 3 weeks. Garrick, the question is not for this year, but just out of curiosity, do you think Verlander would consider making a Smoltz move to the bullpen next year for a team? Saw that he can still hit 98.
I know his brother's been blowing his horn on all of his numbers.
Oh, really?
Lately. Yeah, his brother's been on the big time train of, have you seen Justin Verlander lately hitting 98? Have you seen that in his last three outings he's only given up one earned run? He got lucky on some of those, on the earned runs side of it too, and there were some runs that weren't earned. At the same time, do I think Justin Verlander can do what John Smoltz did at this point in his career? No.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of reclamation? Again, another one of these reunion tours that everybody's clamoring for. You forget why you wanted to turn the page in the first place and move on from Ryan Pressly, from Justin Verlander, why they moved on from Hector Neris when he had one of his best seasons when he was here. Because they know more than we do. They see more than we see. And it just, they understand where they are at their career. It's not going to happen, people.
Verlander got touched up against the Nats two nights ago, apparently. 5 runs, 11 hits, and 5 innings.
Well, there you go. His brother needs to tweet that, too, because it looks like the celebration tour is hit a speed bump.
The caveat here, too, I think Verlander's still chasing wins.
It's
harder to win games in the bullpen, obviously. So I don't think that he would convert to a reliever. Texture says King blows. King has not been good lately. That is true. Can Blue Ball be the closer? I think that's very lofty. Like, there's a guy who's pitched twice in the big leagues this year, and we're ready to proclaim him the closer. Like, I am a little surprised that it was Gordon coming up and not Blue Ball, but maybe they want length, although Blue Ball can provide some length. Maybe Gordon's just available and Blue Ball's not. But and look, I like Blue Ball's arm in the bullpen, but I'm not taking a guy who's made 2 appearances in the big leagues and making him my closer. Like, you have to earn that, man. Like, would I be opposed to him in the bullpen? No. If he pitches really well in the bullpen for 2 to 3 weeks, does he get promotions along the way? Sure. But I'm not just appointing him my closer right now.
No, you got Brian Abreu. There's your closer. Yeah. There's the guy with the best stuff. So stop looking for a closer. Look for the guys that close the gap between 6th and 8th and figure out the guys that are capable of doing that. I also think that whether it's Gordon and or because the Blue Ball has a faster fastball as a competing pitch for a guy later in a game, but I think that from both of those guys' perspectives, they need insurance policies. Because you don't know, no matter what Eric Geddy did in his first start, you need to figure out if Eric Geddy's going to figure it out. And if he doesn't, you need to be able to go to some of these guys that are healthy and able to pitch. If guys that are trying to come back, like Garcia, like Walter, if they're not ready yet, or they just physically can't do it, you need to still have a couple of guys stretched out so that you have every base covered, literally, if those guys can't come back.
Yeah, it's probably Gordon over Blue Ball. I think it's very clear now. Like, Blue Ball pitched on Sunday. He threw 6 innings. It doesn't list the pitches because they don't keep up pitches on MILB.com. But if he threw 6 innings, struck out 7, he probably flirted with 90, 95 pitches, maybe even close to 100.
He did give up run, right?
No run. No, he pitched really, really well. But you're not calling him up today because he's not available.
Right.
Like, Gordon is available. And, like, to your point, like, what if Eric Geddy goes 3 innings today? Like, you want Gordon to be able to eat a bulk amount of those innings. So that was why Gordon over Blue Ball. But maybe that changes whenever Blue Ball is available to pitch.
Yeah, and I'm also talking about as it relates to, like, finding another back-of-the-bullpen type guy.
I think it's impossible.
Yeah, you're right, it's a tough situation anyway, but of those two guys, the guy that would fit the bill more so with his stuff would be a Blue Ball. But at the same time, I think they want both of those guys to stay stretched out because they don't know what they don't know about guys coming back.
I think you can get away with converting one to the bullpen. Because you, like, Javier looked solid yesterday. Uh-huh. Like, Eric Geddy got hit around, but he also gave up soft contact. Like, he's a guy who can at least eat up some innings. Alexander's looked fine. Walter, who knows?
Alexander's the kind of the silver lining here is that he's looked really good his last couple of starts. So he gives you an extra guy to choose from if you want to go that route and convert one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't I don't think we want to see Lance, but you just don't know when he's coming back.
Like Garcia and France, too.
Right.
They're also down the pike. So, like, I think that you can afford to make blue ball a reliever if you so desire. Eulola may be an option. I think blue ball is more of an option than Eulola, though, because blue ball's actually pitched twice in the bigs, whereas Eulola has not. And I've waffled on that. I went back and forth. I remember telling you, no, it's Eulola, not blue ball. I was wrong about that. So I think that blue ball is higher on the pecking order than Eulola right now. And I think that moving blue ball to the bullpen is on the table. You just weren't doing it today.
And Eulola's not on the 40-man, right?
No, you'd have to make a move.
Yeah. So, and I think just from, and I don't know how hard Eulola throws, but I just think that of the, you know, the kind of.
Pretty hard.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Because I think that blue ball for sure from a guy that throws about 90, you know, throws 97, that you bring him at the back end with the other stuff that he brings to the table. And like you said, he's got a major league experience. Mm-hmm. I think he can handle it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him higher on my pecking order than Caleb Ort.
Yeah, the guys you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he would have to earn promotions, but I have no problem moving to the pen. 713-780-ESPN. Let's talk about the other stuff that happened yesterday. Correa's return to Houston. The Astros hitting crochet. Some bats that are getting hot, maybe? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why MyLowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 8/7 to 8/20. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.